Blog Talk Radio.
February 10th, 2014, and this is Foxology Today. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy Monday once again. I am glad that you are listening today. Thank you, thank you, thank you, wherever you are, whoever you are, I thank you. You know, listening is so important. You know, the kind of listening that means that you keep your antenna up, you keep your feelers activated, your tuner tuned in, you know, to the things, the voices, and the happenings all around you. There's always lots of noise on, but oftentimes there's a great lesson or two you can pick up on if you're really listening. You know, a word that may, you know, really inspire you, or a story that resonates with your own that motivates you more. Or you may hear something different or something special that turns the light on for you, something that, you know, will open up your mind or life, the pathway to greater things to be. Listening is important. Sometimes when you hear that certain something and the light goes on within, well, that could be the switch that turns the bright light on to, again, that wonderful pathway that's ahead for you. And, yes, that can and really does happen. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that because I know that for sure. Listening to advice and counsel is necessary, too, sometimes, and in many situations it's critical. Today, my special guest is attorney Peter Walbridge. He's a legal specialist in the area of domestic violence, and today we are going to talk about the important legal issues around this topic. As you may know, this is my third show in the series. I previously did a show, The Will to Win, and we talked about victims and how they can get help, and we also did The Batterer's Battle Within, how batterers can also find support to get past issues. We want to have people living in happy and healthy relationships if at all possible. So we're going to be talking today about another aspect that is important in the lives of these families, and understanding some of the legal ramifications, legal actions, and legal things that can be done. And so I want to welcome my guest, Mr. and Attorney Peter Walbridge. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, it looks like we weren't sure you were going to be able to make it this morning, but fortunately you were able to get in and out of court and in the saddle so you could talk to me. I certainly do thank you for making that happen, sir.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Great. Well, I know you've got a lot of experience in the area of domestic violence. Why don't you give us a short snapshot, a small snapshot of what that looks like and how your beginnings, how you began in that area?
Certainly. I started out as an intern with the district attorney's office doing the same sort of work I'm doing right now, which is getting protective orders for victims of domestic violence and then I transitioned to doing that full-time when I was licensed as an attorney, and been doing that for about a year.
Okay. And you're currently with the
Aid to Victims of Domestic Abuse. Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I know that that is an industry that certainly needs all of the right kind of support that can be available. What have you been able to discover in your participation in the organization? Is it anything like you thought? What attracted you to wanting to be helpful in this area?
I wanted to find a way where I could provide some sort of service. I believe public service is very important, especially in law, because that what drew me to this organization in particular is that we offer legal representation to people that in most cases could not afford it without us being there. And so
mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed doing that. I think that's a very important thing to do. If you have a law degree, try to give back.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and specifically, I just feel like it's a very important way to just have a better sort of environment for the children that are unfortunately caught up in this, and also the victims
mm-hmm.
themselves.
Yes, of course. So for you, it seems like it do you feel it's a mission, if you will, a personal mission
yes.
on your part that you want to be in this area to, again, you know, offer what you do, particularly for people who struggle to maybe even understand or have the wherewithal financially to do what they need to do?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay.
That's very important.
Well, I want to start out, Peter, asking some questions about it, because so many of us may know somebody, have reason to want to understand this, to be able to provide the right kind of insight. Because most of the time, if we're friends or family, you know, we're not going to oftentimes offer a practical strategy for getting the protection. We'll find ourselves upset and, you know, wanting to do things that certainly don't line up with what would make sense to do. So let's say,
that's true.
Just
yeah.
from a perspective, yes, let's just say perspective-wise, we're friends and we're family, and we need to offer an idea. What are we needing to tell victims to do as far as that? What do we tell them they need to go and look for or request or ask for? And, Peter, it sounds like you may be trying to multitask a little bit. I know it's probably in your DNA, but that comes across the air as a lot of movement. So if you can just a few
Sorry.
Moments. Yeah, if you can for a few
I wasn't working on anything else. I was just moving about a little bit with the phone.
Yeah.
I think I'm just, yeah.
Well, you know, all this technology seems to pick up every little movement. So
I see.
If you can get yourself settled and kind of quiet and still, it'll come across a lot clearer. Perfect.
Sorry about
Perfect.
That.
Perfect. So the question I want to know, how do we advise somebody perhaps that we may know personally in the legal direction?
Well, I think the most important thing is to do what they think that they need to do to ensure their own safety, and if they have children, to ensure that their children have a peaceful and loving place to grow up in. I think it's very important from my perspective that we try to break the cycle of family violence. And so if you're asking, if somebody is concerned about their safety, I think that they need to start preserving, you know, any evidence that they might have that there is an abusive or controlling relationship, that they're part of.
Mm-hmm.
That means...
Okay, when you say evidence, be specific. I mean, of course, there's physical evidence that is pretty undeniable. Is that all you're talking about, though, when you say evidence, that there's the signs of having been in abuse?
No. Bruises and things like that are not all that I'm talking about. I'm talking about call logs, you know, on the telephone where you see that somebody has been calling repeatedly in a harassing manner, maybe texts that are threatening or harassing, and that's the kind of stuff that is easily, that evidence is lost sometimes because, you know, maybe the phone was broken or something, or the call logs just go away after a while, you know, off the phone, and you'd have to go get them from the phone company, and that's not always easy to do. So, you know, if you have the kind of phone that has the ability to make a screenshot, if you have access to social media where there's been something that is threatening or controlling or harassing or embarrassing that's been posted by somebody, then that's the kind of stuff that needs to be preserved. And I think it's important that journaling happens. If the person's not at the point where they are going to the police or going to an attorney to talk about this, it's good to have things that gave you pause or concern about an abusive relationship. It's good to have the detail and when it happened, you know, written down.
Okay, and so I know that we recognize that as documentation of sorts. So you're saying that a person who may just be journaling how they felt or what they experienced that day or how horrific the circumstances are, that can be used as evidence in court?
Well, it's more of a situation of having, you know, being able to testify in case it's happened a while ago in the past. That's really where it's most useful because sometimes people come in and they say, you know, I don't remember when this happened. Well, can you, and if you have it written down and you have, I don't remember, and they say, I don't remember what it happened. If you have it written down and you're able to, you know, consult what you wrote, then, you know, that jogs the memory.
Especially,
you know, in traumatic situations, it's not always easy to remember the details and the time frame. So it's more a question of just being able to enter that in as testimony, which is a form of evidence. You know, you're able to enter notebooks, but sometimes the problem with that is entering the entire, you know, you'd have to enter the entire thing, and that might not be exactly helpful.
So
when
you say being in court with this, are we talking about an initial trying to get a restraining order, or what are some of the legal things that people can do initially to try to intervene in that, to stopping the abuse?
The victims or other people?
Yes, the victims.
Okay. I think it's important to preserve the evidence. I think it's important to call the police and file a report because that's part of the documentation that you were afraid and that there was an incident that even if it didn't result in a criminal charge was something a bit of violence or a bit of threatening behavior that put you in fear, and you felt like it was necessary to get the police involved. And protective orders, which are what I do, are different from restraining orders. I don't have really a lot of at all experience with restraining orders. Protective orders are tailored specifically to people that are in relationships, be it familial or dating relationships in the past, or, you know, well, I mean, yeah, in the past, or family members, or, you know, they were married and now they're not married anymore, but they share children, those sort of relationships. And at least in Texas, which is where I practice, you have to show that the violence has occurred and it's likely to continue. And so that's why you want to be able to show that that there's been a sort of, that it's not, you know, an isolated incident, that there's been this violence and this controlling behavior over time.
Okay. Tell us, Peter, if you have people who literally fear this approach. And I ask that because I was told in another interview that the escalation of violence and death typically happens when a victim approaches this situation to do something legally, or they have done something legally, that the statistics just are so increased for additional serious violence to occur. And I'm asking this question not for for you just to give me some type of legal right answer. What I'm asking and what I attempt to do, again, with shows that I'm doing with this, is that wanting people to try to approach what they need to with the confidence, if you will, that they can get the help. But they, it, based on that information that was shared in that interview, it would seem to me that at that point they would also need to seek out some additional types of safety measures to make sure that this process is literally offering them what they're filing for. I'm asking you to just give some insight on what you know relevant to what I just explained.
Yeah, I think it's very important that safety planning and ensuring one's own safety and doing what you know the victim thinks is in his or her best interests and is the most important thing. So that's really a judgment for that each person in each circumstance, and I don't want to give any sort of too broad advice on that. The escalation can happen just when the person says, "I want out of this relationship." So it happens generally even before they start getting either they start getting the police involved or the or some sort of a legal matter, be it a protective order or a divorce or something like that, or filing for child custody. So I think it's up to each person's I think each person needs to do what he or she needs to ensure his or her own safety, and if they feel like a protective order is warranted, if they feel like a protective order is something that they would like to get, then, you know, we're here to help them try and get that. Does that answer your question?
Partially. Do you have an advocate that works with you? I know that in some places they do to help with that, and that's the dot that I'm wanting to connect. As you said, when those situations are occurring, you're not always thinking as clearly or strategically as you need to. You need the help and insight of and advice of other people, counsel of other people.
Yes.
In a lot of circumstances, I would imagine. And I know that there are probably, and you can tell us how that connects with what you're talking about and what I've just asked you, because I'm really asking to give more information to people who are listening.
Okay.
What and how does that advocate assist in a situation like what we're talking about? Do they work hand in hand with you? Is it that they file and you do the legal, and then there's somebody else that says, yes, let's help you get that extra safety that is necessary since this has occurred, or let me give you some additional insight on how to plan your safety from here on in? That's what I'm wanting you to paint a picture for us on.
Yeah, certainly there are shelters, there are safe houses that we give referrals to, and if you want specific information on those, I can give you the phone number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline, which, in case your listeners are spread around the country, that might be helpful. It's 1-800-799-7233. And they will give you more information that is specific to the actual place where that person is.
Okay. Yes, that is helpful. I'm particularly talking about, I know that in one city where I was trained in domestic violence training, there were literal advocates that worked with the attorney, not just at the shelters, and that there were advocates that were lining up with the attorney when these things happened to make sure that there were no missteps once this occurred, once the legal aspect of it occurred. That's more of what I was looking for. I know that I've been
they
step in as a support system for the issue, so that they do try to help the victim make the right decisions going forward to protect herself.
Oh, yes.
And
they
are involved, that work with you, not just with another organization or part of the organization. That's what
yes.
I specifically
want. Oh, I see what you're saying. Sorry, I'm sorry. I understand what you're saying now. the first step before I even get a case is somebody will talk to the person applying for legal services about safety planning and about referrals for shelters and those sorts of things, and just also about, breaking the cycle of family violence, empowering that person to see the signs of an abusive relationship early, referrals to counseling to avoid future abusive relationships, and that sort of thing. Is that what you were talking about? But they're not. When you said advocates, I thought you were talking about attorneys that would do something there. But no. They come from a social worker background, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, what I would like to know from you, for you to provide for us, is things you should know if you are a victim. And I'm asking you this time to be as specific as you possibly can on your legal matters. What are the things a victim needs to know for herself, for her family, for the future of the cases?
They just need to know that the justice system is there to try to get them protection, and that I think it's important that they pursue their legal rights, be it in the criminal area or the civil area. I think a lot of times that embarrassment or desire not to get the partner, the abuser, in trouble leads to an escalation of physical violence, because that they're not making police reports, they're not working with law enforcement, and the victim is then exposed to more violence, or the children see more violence, and I think it's important to understand that sometimes it takes a while, the justice system does, and to ask for help and then do what you can to just be ready to be there. I also just want you know, people to understand that they that I tried to avoid further traumatizing the victim. So we often in the court system we avoid children as witnesses generally, and we avoid hearings if we can come to some kind of agreement that ensures the safety of the victim. So it's a hard system to sometimes get involved with because, you know, it's based on you going in front of the judge and testifying to what's happened, and sometimes that's very hard to do. But, you know, we are here to try to make that process as quick and to make sure that it's not traumatizing them any further. And we provide, you know, counseling as part of that, referrals.
Okay, so they should know that there is the legal system that's going to try to support them, but oftentimes it can be kind of glitchy and slow. I don't know that that's a good thing, but at least it's there and in place. Can you tell us
one thing specific about? Okay. One thing I want to just interject. One thing about the protective order process is it moves pretty quickly. If somebody comes in and we file a protective order, we have to have a hearing on the protective order in 2 weeks from when we file. And in that time, we ask for an ex parte protective order, which is a temporary 20-day protective order. And it's effective as soon as we serve the party, the respondent on the other side. So that's a pretty quick system. But go ahead with your other question, sorry.
I want to know if there are circumstances where you are dealing with both sides of the situation, where the victim and the abuser are in a situation where there may be some type of a negotiation, and if so, what does that look like?
Yes. When we file for a protective order, the other side can appear if they wish to, and sometimes they appear just representing themselves. Sometimes they appear with an attorney. So if they appear representing themselves, then I will talk to them about living under the terms of a protective order without going forward on a hearing. And if they and same if they have an attorney.
Are you able to share what you know about if there are any statistics? I mean, the other statistics that were told to me certainly didn't sound very good or motivating. But can you tell us what you know about when the filing is done? Are you seeing that it can minimize the violence or eliminate it or have cause that the individual does in the relationship successfully?
You know, I don't really have a lot of statistics about that, but I believe that just anecdotally that once protective orders are in place, that I think that the party on the other side will at least see that any of this stuff that has happened in the past, be it threats or harassment or physical violence, could result in a criminal charge if it were to happen in the future, at least over that 2-year period, which is usually how long a protective order lasts. So, and, you know, law enforcement has a notice of the protective order. I always advise clients to carry a copy of the protective order, a certified copy of it, so they can show law enforcement if anything happens that there has been a protective order in the past and it's active now. So there's been incidents in the past, and they can show law enforcement that this is an ongoing situation, not just an isolated event.
Peter, have you ever had a case where the protective order was filed, but then an unfortunate incident occurred, and there the victim may have lost their life? What happens then? What happens to the family, the children? And I'm asking that not because, again, I certainly, the last thing I would want to do is instill any kind of fear or hesitation even on the part of anybody seeking help. But we know, again, the unfortunate realities of some of these situations. And whether it was something like that or a normal situation where somebody's just planning what happens if I'm no longer here, it's something to be considered and discussed. And so I'm asking for that reason. What have you experienced it for, you know, share that with us. And then whether it's this situation or one where the filing has just taken place, what kind of position does that put the children in? Are the children always staying with the victim? Are they sometimes taken from the parents because of other issues? And again, what happens if something unfortunate happens to the victim?
I haven't personally had any situation that exactly has happened. I know that some attorneys have, and, you know, in a case where the victim, let's say the mother was killed by somebody that had a protective order, I think it would probably be a situation where they would try to get an adoption, maybe on the for the benefit of the grandparents. But I guess I haven't had that exactly happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to keep in mind that even, you know, with a protective order in place, it's not something that is automatic. It's something that, you know, there needs to be a call to the police after, you know, or during an incident. So I think I think you're bringing out a very important point, which is keeping, you know, your guard up even after a protective order is in place. And sometimes the best situation is just to not have a lot of contact with that person at all, or to manage that contact in a way that, if for instance, the parties have children, there are ways to manage that contact so it's minimal, and, you know, be it maybe just setting up some sort of go-between or for access and visitation of the children, or having contact that isn't face-to-face, not giving out the phone number, not giving out new information when you move, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And just to always, you know, go back to the safety planning and just be your own, ensure your safety first and foremost.
Okay. Well, I want to go back over a couple of things before I let you go, because I promised you that I'd only take about 30 minutes of your time. I want to make sure that I'm putting out a workable understanding for anybody who may need help or may want to tell someone that they know and love how to get help. One of the first things we want to make sure they understand is that there is a lot of help out there from agencies, support systems, advocates who will definitely step in. And so they need to call that number, 1-800-799-SAFE, which is 7233. Secondly, if they are in an actual situation where the violence is occurring, call the police.
Yes.
Is there anything to do other than, I mean, of course, if you say that you're in a violent situation, and again, we hear too many stories where the police were a little late, or, you know, and then something happened, and, you know, we're hearing so much of these things in the news.
Yes.
When that alert goes out, I think it's important just to really make it clear that you need emergency assistance and you need it right now. And that's just my little, you know, I'm throwing that 2 cents in there, because, again,
yes,
a few seconds or a couple of minutes could mean life or death. The second thing that you say,
yes,
is it's suggested by the police that they file the protective order. Who gives that advice at that time? Is this just something we want a victim to know, that's the next thing you should do is file the protective order?
Let me circle back to one thing. It's possible sometimes to file a police report after, you know, the incident, Right. So let's say that there's a situation where you have called the police, but they say, you know, we're not going to be there for a while. Okay, then take yourself away from that situation and then maybe follow up with a police report later once you've ensured your own safety. If you don't, if somebody doesn't feel comfortable waiting for the police and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think your advice
sometimes
is really good.
Sometimes you can't wait for the police. That's what
no,
I...
No, of course. Exactly. 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 So if you can't wait, you can still... That doesn't mean... I don't want people to think that they can't then follow up and file a report later because they didn't wait for the police. They can always go to a police station and file a report after the fact.
Okay.
Just going back to your question, sometimes the police do refer people to get protective orders, and then, you know, yeah, we sit down and talk to them about the incidents, and if they're in the Harris County, you know, they can definitely reach out to us or the Harris County District Attorney's Office. Our number here at AVDA is 713-224-9911. If they believe that they would like to talk to somebody about a protective order or a divorce or a child custody situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, right now, as the show does air all over, and so what I'm really looking for,
okay,
which I know will be the same in every situation, there are basic things that are going to be available and should be known. Call the police. Look to get yourself into a place of safety. Do what you can as far as legal rights. You can file a protective order to
mm-hmm.
help have the legal intervention that needs to be in place. Is there anything else?
Just go back to preserving evidence and documenting the incidents and looking at counseling. I think counseling is very important to break that cycle.
Okay. All right. Well, I sure do thank you for being able to sit down. I know you were cutting it close there for a minute, but that information certainly is important that people know what steps they can and should take and what legal protection there is. One other question I want to ask before I do let you go. You did say that the system itself can be lengthy. When a woman or a man has filed, can that process be more than, you know, 30 days, 2 months? When you say lengthy, what can we look at the possibility of having it wrapped up?
Well, again, I meant lengthy generally with the divorce or child custody issues.
Mm-hmm.
Or criminal cases sometimes are pending for a while. Again, the protective order process, and I can't speak for the rest of the country, but in Texas, we're required to set a hearing within 2 weeks of when we file. So that's not a 30-day situation. As long as we serve the party, we're in court at most 2 weeks from when we file. So that moves pretty quickly. And there are ways to get ex parte protective orders, you know, in the meantime. So we ask for a protective order to be in place as soon as we file, and if the judge grants it, then that is in place as soon as we get the other party served. So that could
how
be a couple days.
How you mentioned child custody? How often are children at risk of being caught in that situation?
Well, I mean, I think they're always at risk because even if one party is not directly violent with the children, they see the abusive behavior modeled by their parents, and then not only does that have an emotional toll, but it also sometimes creates a situation where they will also either be abusive or abused by their loved ones, you know, the people that, when they're adults. So I think that is a big problem, and I think they're caught up in it if not directly, with actual physical violence. I believe they're caught up emotionally, and I think a lot of times it creates a situation where the cycle continues.
Right, of course. Well, again, I want to thank you so much for taking your time. If you would like to give out that 800 number again, I know that I did, but
yes.
I'll give it out one more time.
Yes. It's 1-800-799-7233, and that is National Domestic Violence Hotline. They can get talk about what legal services are probably in the specific area where you are. They can talk about shelters and safe houses, counseling, safety planning, all of the important initial work, even before somebody's ready to get maybe talk to an attorney.
Okay. Well, attorney, well, Rich, thank you so much for the information. And again, anybody who's listening, please do call 1-800-799-SAFE, which is 7233. And there is all the advocacy support information that you could possibly need if you need this help. Attorney Walbridge, thank you again. I hope you have a great day.
Thank you. It was really my pleasure. Have a great one.
Thanks. And I appreciate you, listeners. Again, this series is designed to keep you informed. You never know who you could be a help to. And again, that number is 800-799-SAFE 27233. Appreciate you tuning in today. I'm looking forward to talking to you next time. In the meanwhile, enjoy your day.